In this 66th episode of the Misal podcast, you will listen to my conversation with Gohar Shafiq, a serial entrepreneur and founder of WeWant Design, an easy-to-use design and development service for startups, enterprises, and agencies. Let's listen in. Welcome to Misal podcast, Gohar. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me, Zahid.
Excited to have you on. You're a serial entrepreneur, and I don't get to talk to that many serial entrepreneurs. So really excited to have you on and learn more about what you are working on these days. Let's get started with a quick introduction. Please tell me a little bit about yourself and what are you working on these days?
Right now, I'm working on agencies. So one side is the servicing side that we do. So we have two agencies, Buzz Interactive and Designit. They're typical tech and design and development agencies. But this year, we launched another agency model. So it's a productized service model. So it's fairly new in the market. So we call that WeWant Design. So it's a on-demand subscription model, just like Netflix. You come, you subscribe, we start giving you deliverables. There's no contracts, nothing. And we are building it a very unique way. We are trying to go as public as we can, sharing our revenues, processes, workflows, whatever we can share. And right now, we are somewhere around 35,000 to 40,000 MRR. Along with that, we're also building another SaaS software. It's called Flow. It's a project management tool. And one of the USPs that we have in that software is that, so for example, all the typical softwares, they had this Kanban taken from Japanese approach. So we wanted to innovate a new kind of approach apart from the typical list view, Kanban, and other views. So we have cracked that part, but now we're currently into designing the UI part of it, and then obviously, we'll be developing it and then releasing it to the market. So this is what we are doing right now.
All right. So that sounds exciting. So before I move on, I also want to make sure that I understand that this is not your first time doing something like this, and you have previously created a software product and sold it. So can you talk a little bit about what have you already built and why did you decide to sell it instead of like running it? And what were the challenges there?
So I started my entrepreneurial journey when I was still studying in LSE. So I failed a lot. I started my first t-shirt company. I failed. Then I started another agency. So we were very successful in that agency. I think the headcount was somewhere around 40 people that were working. I was still studying at the time. So during that time, we saw a problem that, okay, we were not liking the way the accounting used to invoicing, all the debit and credit, all that stuff was happening. So we started creating the software. It was called eCountant. We sold that software to MasterCard, all the algorithms and everything. Back then, AI was not such a fancy thing, but we developed an algorithm that, so whenever you posted an entry, it automatically determines that, okay, this is a debit entry or credit entry based on the past, your transactions and history. So it all automatically classifies those entries. So we sold that company. Then I sold my agency as well. My study was completed. So I'm from Gujarawala. My parents called me back that, okay, you're the only son, you have to come back now. It's all done. So I joined my family business. After 1 year, I got an opportunity to work with Brimmers. I became their youngest CEO of the company. And when I was there, the headcount was somewhere around 50 people. When I left them, it was 130 people. So during that time, it was my employment time. So I was working as an employee, not as an employer mindset. So I learned a lot. It was a very different, different kind of experience for me. When I left that company, then I started working on a CRM product. It was Funnel CRM. Recently, it was acquired by a US investor. They were into sales parts, Chrome extensions and whatnot, and they wanted to get into this vertical. So we sold that company. And one of the reasons to sell that company was when we got into this industry, CRM industry, after getting into it, we understood that, okay, this is highly competitive. It was very lucrative, one of the top 10 industries that you want to get into SaaS, but obviously highly competitive. We were competing with from Microsoft to HubSpot to whatnot. All the solutions were already in marketing. So when we calculated our marketing spend, after all the research that we finalized the marketing spend, we bought another research from Gartner. And we got to know that Pipedrive has the budget that we have for the whole year. They just spent that whole budget in just 1 hour. So we thought it was very difficult to compete in that market. But One of the, again, USPs that we had was the design part of it, UI UX part. We nailed it and we started working on the content marketing part, some of other strategies, and it worked for us. So we got ranked. We started ranking on those high level keywords that we wanted to. The CPC was very high. We were number one, number two on those kind of keywords. We start getting queries and, you know, getting some result out of it. This was a summarized version of what I was doing into my previous.
It seems to me that you have a really good handle on what a customer wants. And I think a lot of people or entrepreneurs struggle with that a lot as to what to build that someone will, a customer will pay for. So is there a process that you use or have you used in the past to do this, you know, customer discovery where you discover a customer problem and then go and build a product and then try to sell the product? Is there a process that you use?
Yeah, so I learned it the hard way. So initially when I was building all the softwares and other companies, all the core pain point was something that we faced internally. So for example, for the Sierra product, we tried a lot of software. Some were very bloated, some were very expensive enterprise level. And then we moved back again to Google Sheets. So I thought there should be a very easy process to, you know, design that CRM, but not very bloated, not very, you know, tech savvy. A normal person can use it. So we tried to focus on that. But the other thing that we learned throughout this journey was that you have to learn your persona. One of the key advantages that we have when we started getting traction was we understood the persona. It was not someone who was already using a CRM. It was someone who was using a CRM on maybe Google Sheets or maybe just manual pen and paper. And now they want to pivot to a software system. So that was the core persona that we learned. Another thing that we learned, again, very hard way was sometimes we thought that, okay, this is the feature set that we thought that, okay, this is what customers want. So what we did was we started a voting feature for all the customers who were using our software. And they voted for something that we never intended to have, you know, develop. So for example, 80 or 90% of the customers wanted forms, integrations, et cetera, and we were not focusing on that. So I think there's a scientific process. One, you need to learn from your own internal problems. Second, it should be involve your ideal customer into your building process. So you will learn that, okay, now you're not solving for your own problems, but now you have to solve for masses. So you have to include them, and then numbers should dictate that, okay, this should be the direction for your company or how do you pivot your SaaS and how do you want to grow?
That's really interesting because what you're talking about is basically known as scratching your own itch. Basically, a problem that you have, you try to solve it, and then you see if a customer also has that same problem, or you discover a customer while, you know, solving your own problem and then try to sell that solution to the customer. So that's really great. So so do you have a background in software development, and are you the main architect of these you know, solutions that you build, or do you have like a team that you either go to or hire to build this for you?
So I don't have any background in computer science, but I try to learn all the basic languages. So whenever I'm, and based on, again, coming from that agency experience and the service side sector, I knew how to deal with. So for example, we were making mobile applications for big banks. We were making middlewares for different companies. We were making UI UX design for aeronautical industries. So with that background, I knew that as a business person or as someone from the marketing background, how do you make sense of, make a business case out of something that you want to take from the tech side? So based on that experience, I knew that, okay, when I'm sitting with someone technical, I understand that, okay, this is the jargon, this is the lingo. So he does not cheat me. So that's the way that I took a start. It was obviously difficult in start because you have to learn your way. Otherwise, you know, you can't understand that, okay, this is the right tech stack. This is how you build the architecture. This is how you will scale when you start getting some traction. So we have a team that, you know, development, design and all these departments. So I am the one who conceives the idea and then tries to find out all the resources, the best ones that I can find, and then try to build upon that.
One thing that I want to ask you is, like, you know, you see a lot of service agencies. I think that there are so many software development houses in Pakistan, and like almost, you know, everyone is, you know, doing some sort of like development work for, you know, companies outside, you know, Pakistan or maybe within Pakistan. But there are not that many products that you see launched like SaaS products from Pakistan. Why do you think that's the case?
It's the typical ecosystem that we are into. So, for example, one of my recent interactions, I was speaking at a university. I think 80 or 90% of the audience, they were obviously audience who were from different backgrounds, different degrees. They knew nothing. The only thing that he knew right now was e-commerce and Amazon. So I thought, why was that? The only reason is that I think we, as someone sitting in the industry, we say someone in the Amazon industry, they stepped up. They had much more vocal voice in terms of building their audience, making sure that, okay, this is the right industry that you need to get on. And then this has a trickle-down effect. This impacts all the universities, students, other industries, even government policies as well. But when we see SaaS industries, obviously there are very few people in this industry, and they're very, you know, they're not very vocal about it. They've not communicated, they build communities. If you see Western people who are building SaaS, so one of them I follow, Basecamp founder. So if you look at him, he writes blogs, he do podcasts, he's author of many books. So again, he's very vocal. So you learn from him. And then you see that, okay, SaaS is the next big thing that I want to get into. But if you see an average student who is just starting his career, he's now intrigued into maybe Amazon, dropshipping, maybe some of them are intrigued into agency side. But into SaaS, there are very few people who are telling that, okay, these are some of the perks that you see. This is the monetary value that you will get in the long term. This is the advantage. And that, I think that's, again, the reason why if we see our neighboring countries like India, you see a lot of big startups like Zoho and other SaaS coming out of those regions. But in Pakistan, we still have a very, I think, minute ecosystem in terms of people who are already doing SaaS, and they're very vocal about
it. Do you think a lot of that has to do with like how difficult it might be to sell SaaS? Because it doesn't come naturally to most Pakistanis that, you know, especially techies, that if they make a product, for example, I come across a lot of people who are just absolutely technical, right? Like they can program stuff, but they can't sell. And then again, you have people who can sell, but they can't program, right? So you fall like in between where you can like, you know, have a team build a certain product that you want to get built. And then you have the ability to also sell given your experience. So how does that play into the fact that, you know, being in Pakistan and trying to sell a SaaS product to the rest of the world or even in Pakistan, how does that happen? Like, what's the one thing that you would advise people to do when it comes to those things?
So I think I don't believe in this perspective. Every industry that you can think of is very difficult. So there are C players and then there are A players. So if you have to move towards the A player team, you have to do something about it. Either you want to learn. So there are so many ways to, maybe if you're not good at sales, you can learn it. If you're not good at programming, you can now learn it. It's much easier as compared to if you go back 10 years, 20 years back. The only limitation is the mindset. That's it. So I think, so even if you are doing Amazon, even if you're doing digital agency, there are some agencies in US, they're earning in billions of dollars, and some agencies in Pakistan, they might shut down after 1 year. So the problem is not about the challenge itself. Every industry might have some kind of good parts, pros and cons. Some might be very easy, some might be difficult. I don't feel SaaS is difficult. Obviously, there are some roadblocks, but you can see any kind of roadblocks in any kind of industry as well when you step into it. So for example, when you start podcast, in the starting, it's very easy. But when it gets very boring, that you have to wake up, you have to record, then edit, then post edit, then create 1,000, then it gets boring. So you learn that way. If you, for example, after making 5 episodes, you say that, okay, this is a very boring stuff. It's very difficult. Now I have to. And then there are some approaches to do it. So for example, Zanet can hire another team who can do the editing, all that stuff. Obviously, that will take some resources. Or either Zanet will do it till he achieves that point that, okay, now I can delegate it easily. So I think in SaaS, it's the same scenario. If you don't have the resource, time, energy to do it, you have to do it yourself. Learn, grow up the way. And once you achieve that, you can, you know, then delegate that part to maybe team, high team, get resources, scale up. And then there's another interesting trend that I've seen in the last few years. Now they are one man SaaS company. They make Chrome extensions. They make other digital stuff and products out. And they're just one man show. That's it. So now we don't even have to rely on other people to help us grow. If you're smart enough to learn new skills, it can be development, it can be digital marketing, it can be sales, it can be podcasting, anything. You now have the resources to learn. The only problem is the mindset. We have that limitation in mind that, okay, now I have to first develop it. And I think that's the wrong way to do SaaS. They start developing it. They don't have the budgets, and then when they are ready to market it, they are exhausted. The better way to do it is you start learning all the skill set that is required to make that work, and you get on it. And that's it. That's the journey will take you on.
You just mentioned marketing, and I wanted to, my follow-up question was also going to be about marketing. How does one figure out how to market, given, like you mentioned, right, CRMs, there are so many, and it's so competitive, and that their marketing budgets are huge. So how would someone building a product, let's just say they have a couple of customers, they know the product works, they're, all doing all the development and stuff, but now they really, really need to grow and need to market. What's the best channel, that you would recommend?
Marketing is very subjective in terms of, it's all about experimenting. The only thing that you have to keep in mind is that whatever you're doing, either you're making your marketing website, you're doing your social media, you're doing your SEO, you have to make sure that how do you stand out? So for example, if I have a SaaS of CRM, every other website will be automatically saying a typical hero banner, then all the typical things. If I stand out in terms of designing much better UI, maybe for my marketing website, I'll stand out. So I'll give you an example. Recently, for V1 Design, it's a 7-month-old startup. Now we wanted to get into US market, and we wanted to be one of the key leaders into whenever you are trying to find a designer in US. So we thought that, okay, you might be searching for creative agencies in US, creative agencies in New York. So they were, I think, more than 3,000 plus pages that we had to develop and design. So what we did was we launched a programmatic SEO campaign. Within a week, we designed a very good page for these kind of cities. We launched more than 3,000 plus pages for a new website without any backlinks. Now we're getting somewhere around 5,000 traffic from just these keywords. So if I tell this approach to a typical SEO person or maybe someone from the business side, they must be telling me that, okay, this is not possible. But we did it. The only approach right now is, even with social media, so every other maybe business owner, what they do is, the only mistake that they make is they take out a product image, place the logo, post it on your social media, and they think they're doing social media. But it's not that. You have to connect. You have to make it funny. You have to make it entertaining. You have to build some kind of audience on your social media to make sure that, okay, I recall your name. If people are able to recall your name, whenever they're purchasing, they will now understand that, oh, yes, this is the agency, this is the CRM, this is XYZ product that I want to buy. So I think marketing is very easy if you understand and you experiment that, okay, this is the persona that I want to take. And how do you differentiate yourself from other players in the market?
When you look in the market right now, and like you see, of course, you see a lot of problems, right? Like you see people trying to solve different problems, and there are some problems that you might have as a builder, right? What are some of those problems that you wish someone else was trying to solve?
The age and time that we are into, it's not just about the problem and the solution. It's, we have added another layer. So it's the experience layer now. So for example, when you see Apple and Samsung fighting, they might have same camera, same, all the features are almost same. That they've stopped advertising that, okay, this is 8GB, this is X megapixel, etc. What they're trying to sell you right now is the experience, the UI, and the whole ecosystem. So I think whatever problem that you are into, so for example, right now we are getting into project management space. It's again very crowded space. It's not something that we are first one entering into market. All the big players are into it. They're earning billions out of it. So the only approach that we had was, if we're just going to make another simple UI, it's just another software with a Kanban approach or maybe list and typical features that you find in all the other project management, we will say. So we reverse engineered. We thought that, okay, till date, people might not like Basecamp or maybe Airtable or maybe Notion, not because the solution is not correct, just because they have another visual appearance that, okay, this is how I need to get and sort my things. That's why everything works. you still have audience for Basecamp, you still have audience for HTML, because these are similar solutions but packed into different UI features. And then obviously features as well. So we took another approach. We reverse engineered. We thought that, okay, just like someone invented Kanban view, what could be another view that whenever I'm looking into my day view, my projects and my team, it should be one view that I should be able to see everything. So we started cracking that part. So again, I think instead of just following a pain point and just making a software on top of it will not suffice in this age. You have to be in between and crack that experience part first. It can be a UI, it can be a UX, it can be something, a feature, it can be a unique feature set, but you have to find that sweet spot first. Otherwise, if it's just another typical software in the market, you will not be able to sell that. So again, in terms of finding a problem, I still find so many problems. How to monitor attendance, how to monitor performance of my team, how to perform, manage workflows, how to create automations out of whatever I'm doing. There are so many, and then with the advancement of AI and blockchain and so many new technologies coming in, I think then the room is, again, there's a new kind of wave in the market to create these kind of apps. So for example, if you're building a typical kind of project management tool, you can add in the blockchain layer, you can add another maybe AI layer into that as well. But again, the solution is not to just to make another problem because this was a problem that you faced. There should be some kind of experience layer into it. Otherwise, it's just another software in the market.
I understand that you hire people, you have a team and stuff. So what is your hiring process like? You know, what do you look for when you're hiring someone? Is it the talent, or is it like an experience? Is it the passion? Like, what do you look for?
Obviously, there should be some kind of technical skill set that the person has. We don't look into experience. We don't look into degrees, but we do look into personality part of it. And how do we judge that? We have for different kind of roles, because we're not just into SaaS, we also into agency. So we have to hire for very different variety of roles. So we ask very different questions. So for example, one of the typical questions we ask for for a UI designer is that, okay, we are designing a new ATM machine for 5 years old. How would you approach that? So some people, they pick up my marker, they start designing. Some people, they're very verbal. Some people start telling me the workflow that, okay, I'll first research the audience, then. So with these kind of maybe not very much tricky questions, but, you know, more personality-based questions that how one person is solving that X problem. So now I understand that, okay, whenever we have a new challenge, whenever we are designing, whenever we are challenging something new, I see that this person might be able to fix that problem because his brain is, you know, this is how his brain works. So I really like those people, especially. So for example, one of the recent one, Kate, he picked my pen. He started designing some of the machines, UI, all the wireframes. So now I'm impressed that, okay, he's not still hired. And he has, you know, solving that kind of problem for me. So this shows that, okay, this might be a talent resource. Obviously, you have to vet all the technical skill set. He's useless if he's not, in terms of his technical skill set, he's not so much good, but we can train that part as well. So this is one thing. Another thing that we look into is the journal approach to learning. So for example, I typically ask, what is the podcast that you're listening right now? What is the book that you're reading right now? If they are into that space, they're learning something new, they're watching videos, they're learning something, which means that they have this capacity to experiment. Otherwise, it's just what they have learned over the years in their current comfort zone. So we typically hire those people who have this mindset to learn. Second is the ability to answer the questions.
One thing that I do want to ask you is, like, you know, given the current environment in the country and everything, the economy and everything, it has, of course, has some effect on how you, you know, do the business, right? So what are those challenges that you currently have, and like, how do you go about solving those challenges?
I think the only, if you're earning in dollars, financially, there's no challenge. The only challenge for us is one, obviously human resource itself, because we have to vet a lot just to get that one person. So recently we interviewed more than 200 plus people and we selected only one out of 200 batch. So that's a challenge. I think that's lacking, because companies want to move at a fast pace, and when they're scaling, they don't have the capacity. So for example, 2 years back, I might hire someone fresh, and then I had this mentality that, okay, I'll take in and I'll bring him. But now, if the capacity that we are dealing, the clientele that we are working with, we can't afford that. We can't have that kind of system that, okay, let's take someone who might have good personality, good skill set, but he's average. We'll take in, we'll try to train him. So that's another challenge when you're growing. You now have to find another A or B team players with you to make sure that they match with the personality that you're building of in your company. And the second challenge is, I think, in terms of the logistic part. By logistics, what I mean is a typical SaaS entrepreneur or maybe an agency entrepreneur in Pakistan has to create a LLC in US, get another digital bank, lots of issue in getting payments in Pakistan. Some of the payments, they differ by maybe US bank or maybe Pakistan bank. And then you don't know that, okay, one fine day, you don't have access to internet for next 3 days. So I think these kind of infrastructure and logistic parts are very important. So for example, a typical maybe freelancer or maybe a very good agency or maybe a very good company might have same level of problems. Just to create a simple bank to receive your payment from a US customer and bring it back to Pakistan, it's very painful. I think there should be, in terms of an effort from the government side as well and from the local industry as well, how do we solve these kind of problems together? Not just to facilitate the big boys and the player, but also someone, maybe a freelancer who has clientele in maybe US, working on a small product or maybe a service product. It's too painful for him to get that done.
Yeah, I mean, so what you're talking about, like, you know, I started following the startup ecosystem like 10 years ago, and the problems that were there 10 years ago, those same problems are still there. So nothing has changed in the past 10 years. So I can tell you right off the bat that what you're talking about is a big issue. You know, small players, big players, almost everyone has it, but no one seems to have like figured out a way to get through to people in power to get something, you know, done about this problem. That's pretty big problem. Anyways, so where do you see yourself in the next, like, you know, 5 years, 10 years? What's the plan? Are you building your project management tool to sell it, or are you just going to run it this time? And what are you trying to do with the agency long term?
So this year, I had a very, very different kind of approach personally and for my professional side as well. So what I did last year, 2023. So what I did was I did a public challenge, 30 days. I went on Twitter and I had to post every day. After I completed that, the next challenge was I had to create video every day for 30 days. After that was completed, I had another challenge that I had to adapt 10 good habits, reading, namaz, and many other going to gym, etc., etc., for 30 more days. Then I took another challenge that I have to create a fresh new company and I have to take it to $1 billion MRR, not even ARR, MRR, in public. So right now we're at 30K and I think that's what I am into right now. It's a very financial goal, but the objective here is to, I want to be more vocal that, okay, we have to now see that, okay, there are so many other people who want to out of Pakistan. They have good ideas, good brains, good upbringing. They have the skill set, but they don't know how to do it. So I want to play my part. Obviously, that there's a selfish interest as well. I will earn money, obviously. But along with that, I want to maybe be more vocal about it. That, okay, this is how I'm building. I might be wrong. I might be right. But this is how I'm doing it. And that's why I took a new company. V1 Design is just a 6-7 months old company. Just wanted to show the people that if you have good intentions, if you have the right kind of exposure and experience into building things, you can do it. It's not a problem anymore. So I think with this year, this is the main financial goal that we have. It's very, I think, not just easy, over-ambitious, but we want to do it. We want to challenge ourselves. If someone from West can do it, why can't we do it? Even if we fail, at least we try it. And then in terms of building, now I want to focus on this, my agency part and then the SaaS part. We are taking a very slow approach on building the UI and UX part for the software that we're developing because we don't want to rush into making another software that no one wants to use or it's just another typical project management software. So we want to be very thought. That's not something I recommend personally as well. I believe you should be very fast into building products and launching it. But with this one, we are taking it at a very slow burner approach that, okay, let's take our time. Let's build something that we at least internally love it when we launch.
Well, that's good. I think you should take some time because I think you have proven yourself time and again. So you can take a little bit more time this time and see if you can build a better product, a better business out of the product that you're building. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a great conversation. I learned a lot more about what you're building. Plus, your advice is very invaluable for everyone listening. So thanks. Thank you so much for being on the Misal podcast and best of luck.
Once again, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Misal podcast. I hope you enjoyed the podcast and will thank me by writing a review or sharing it on social media. Make sure you follow and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Thanks again. See you soon.